friends, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
What's up, everybody out there in Traumedy Land? It's Kenneth Allen coming back, as I promised, the week after. Saying I'm going to set up some weekly shows. And this was supposed to be a recording of my lecture that I did for my EMT class. And I did that. I went and recorded it on a new lavalier mic that I strapped to the collar of my shirt and did a whole lecture on diabetes, endocrine, and hematologic diseases. And a lot of it was good. But there were a couple glitches that I'm figuring out now that I recorded it. One of them was it stopped recording halfway through the lecture about 3 or 4 times, right in the middle of the best stuff. Always. Isn't that always how it goes? The stuff you want recorded the most is the stuff that gets screwed up. Because you're thinking about it, almost there's some weird inverse energy out there that's waiting for that moment where you really want it. And maybe in the back of your head, you think, don't make this happen. Don't make this crash, and it does, because you gave credence to the enemy. And it cut out some of the great stuff about how insulin's the transport hormone that brings in sugar, and the class going, oh, and getting it. But there were some good parts in that. And then the other thing was, I realized, because for you out there who are recording, you have to put your phone on airplane mode, even if you're using it as a recording device, because it'll do that. Anybody know what I'm talking about? When you're recording with a phone around you, when a message or a signal's coming in, like a text, you'll go tick, 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 and your text will come in. And you can hear that on the mic. And then if a phone call comes in, it goes, and then the phone starts ringing. It's crazy. Actually, the mic picks up the phone call before the phone starts ringing. It's so trippy. How crazy is technology that stuff is like out there floating invisibly, and it starts to affect stuff even before your senses pick it up. It's trippy. It's a trip. There's so much about what's floating around in the ether and the way that text messages get shipped across the world and make it to your phone in seconds, and that you can speak to somebody. Remember when you used to call long distance back in the day? First of all, it sounded like you were way out here. Hey, BOC, can you hear me? I'm in Hawaii. And it was totally far away. And you go, yeah, you got to speak up. I am. Put your face to the phone. I am. Why can't you hear him? I mean, it was really back then, analog signals being sent through cables that crossed the Pacific Ocean. And there'd be a little delay. There'd be a few second delay before you answered. And so you go, hey, what are you doing? Hey, what? And you go, I was doing, no, you go, no, you go, no, I'm not doing, what? Okay, I'm not, what? I mean, fucking half the conversation would do that. You kind of get that with web chats now, but Jesus, it was such the norm back then compared to now with a cell phone calling somebody in Prague. And it's like they're in the same town. What a trip. Suffice to say, it didn't quite work out the way I wanted it to do on the lecture. So I'm not bringing you the lecture this week. But then I kept thinking about how cool that class is that I get to bring up diabetes for the first time to these people. They've heard it, but they don't know what exactly it is. And I get to actually explain it in a way that they get it for the first time and talk about stuff like, well, how'd they know that the blood and the sugar was in the blood and sugar was in the urine? Because physicians back in the day, before testing procedures, would literally taste the urine of their patients and say, oh, that's sweet. Well, I bet you this is diabetes. You know, crazy factoids like that, that just make people go, are you, you know, and crack jokes and have fun. And all the while I'm getting to teach them information and fun stuff that will stick with them so that they remember it in an innate way, that they'll take to their job and to their dying day. I think it's truly, truly the best gig any human being can have, to be a teacher of the human body, the human psyche, on a very basic level. The EMT program with basic anatomy, physiology, and pathophysiology, and knowledge of treatment, and, you know, explaining this stuff, I think every human on earth has to take this course. I learn something every day that I teach it. Every time I come back and have to reconfigure what I'm going to say in the lecture, you know, I have to rethink this stuff and see how I know it, and see how can I make this new and fresh, and still, you know, intrigue people and intrigue myself each time I talk about it. It's got to be like how a comedian has to go and approach his jokes, or a lead guitarist has to reconfigure and really put his heart and soul into a solo that he's played thousands upon thousands of times. And the other cool thing was, in the middle of talking about hematologic diseases, I got to sickle cell, and one of the kids in the class just raises his hand and says, "Yeah, I have that." I said, "You have sickle cell?" He goes, "Yeah, yep, I have it. My sister has it." And when we were told about it, I said, "What did they exactly tell you?" You know, and he explained, "Well, they told him that, you know, the cell's a sickle. So what's that all about? What does it actually mean?" And from there, I take this learning abstract thing, and now I'm applying it to the class and the student in the class, and it's real to them. It's tangible. It's the guy sitting right next to this guy. It's him. You can go talk to him afterwards and say, you know, "How's that feel?" And I literally sat and talked to him. I said, "So how's it feel? You ever had a crisis where the sickle cells will lodge in a blood vessel and cause a backup and extreme pain and inflamed and inflammation, and you know, and what kind of medication do you take for this, if you don't mind my asking?" And he said, "Oh yeah, sure. No, I haven't had any of that yet, but you know, I have family members that are on pain meds for this, and they, you know, they take different blood thinners." And I said, "So they do take blood thinners? Because I don't know that much about it. I don't know about what it's like to live with it and the palliative care that goes along with it, right? Like the daily stuff. But I know the emergency stuff. I know when we show up, they're in pain, and I can give them morphine, and I should give them a lot more morphine than most people because they have a tolerance, because they're on opiates because of it. But I don't know what it's like to live with sickle cell and the types of things that it stops you from doing and the things that you have to think about, the risk factors and the lifestyle, and what a blessing it is to have real people in the class that can talk to me about that and can share with the course. And also for me to tell the student, the person that has it, what I know about it, to clear up their understanding of the disease and exactly what's going on. I mean, what an incredibly rewarding, tangible job. It's just such a gift that I've been given that, you know, I always wanted to teach. In fact, I used to sit and actually run through lectures in my head before I even taught and just think about what it would be like to have my own class. And now I have it and I have classes. And it's just so enjoyable. And the other thing is it's this one forum on earth in society where people come and are gravitate to because of maybe traumatic events in their past that sparked this kind of curiosity and want or need to know more about in order to maybe even overcome something that they've dealt with as children or growing up. And they can come in and, you know, most students have some kind of traumatic experience they can talk about. Some of them will bring it up in class and say, "I had a grandparent or a parent die of a stroke, and I remember watching them, and they started to lose this tone on their face, and you can see them remembering it and working through it and talking about it and starting to kind of tear up and talk about it with us." And then I can say, "Yeah, so do you see what was happening? So which side of the face was it? What was the right side? And you know where that was probably occurring is probably the left side." And they start to go, "Okay, yeah, yeah." It's a place where you can put fact and science and understanding to emotion and tag it as something positive in the end. Tag it as a learning experience rather than have this thought, this memory in the back of your head that you can only access, or when you access it, it causes you to cry and feel upset and powerless. Now you can analyze it scientifically. You can get it. And they think there's an empowerment there. You know, maybe for me, when I think of things like that, I can see injuries and illnesses that I've seen family have. And you can think about it and understand it. So then when you see it in the field, when I run across these patients, I have the power to understand it and treat it. It's a very sacred profession. And it's really holistic to me, and I hope to the students, I hope I get that across to them, how really viscerally important and important for your lives the class can be, really, that I just thought, you know, I'm going to come on the podcast and talk about that today. Just a real quick understanding of this stuff. I believe that this course should be taught in schools, in high schools. You don't even need to get your EMT certification. It should be at least a course that's done in high school. So that you get it. You get it. It's a basic, broad, you know, understanding of the human body. What can go wrong and how can we treat it? What's going on here? How can we think practically and how can we treat it? Rather than panicking, yes, you can feel those urges to panic, but fight through it or at least feel it. And then because of your understanding and your knowledge and your training, you fall back on that training and knowledge. And you make some decisions and you empower yourself a little bit more to, one, take care of that patient, and to, two, create a memory in your head of that moment as something constructive, something positive, and something intellectual rather than something panic and limbic in nature, something reptilian where it's a just gut panic reaction to something. To me, that is the overall goal for me, is to teach them and myself how to stand in the face of crisis, of fear, of that holy, you know, that moment. How can I empower them to do it, and how can I reinsure that I'm going to do that with each call that I go on, with each patient that I go on? Number one, treat the patient, know the best care for them. And two, if it's something that's going to stick in your head, let it stick because of a science. Let it stick because of a learning experience, not as something that you never get over. So as much as this is about the students, the reward I get from this thing is tenfold. And it really is kind of a therapeutic thing. I just love it. I love it. I feel like I'm holding my breath thinking about it, because I want you to understand how important it is to me. Yeah, I just dig it. And I invite you all, even if you don't want to be EMTs, if you're in school, you're going to school, take a City College course, take a class with EMT, learn it, understand it. Because it's really just the nuts and bolts of the human being. And it's not just the body, we get into the mind. We talk about, you know, how the human body handles stress. We talk about, on, you know, an endocrine level, cortisol levels increasing. The cause of the stressors it actually causes scientifically on muscles and memory, and how high stress situations cause tunnel vision and they cause depression. And it teaches you, well, all of these things are noted and they can be addressed and they can be handled properly. You know, you get into ideals about morality and ethics and what it means to be professional, what it means to show up every day, look good, you know, look professional, treat people with respect, learn how to deal with stress, not by reacting, but by choosing a calm line of action and executing that line of action. To me, this is my, you know, this is my martial art. So I've been looking into martial arts along the way. So I've been looking into doing some other kinds of training and things. and it appeals to me because I recognize similar tenets of discipline and training and knowledge, because it's in my training and knowledge of EMT, of emergency medicine. So it really resonates in my soul, in my heart, and in my brain with it. And I think, you know, I get a lot of people asking me, how do you handle these calls with this patient who's acting this way, or they're dying, and how do I talk to them? Well, to me, number one is you try a procedure, you talk about it, you do it with the patient, and then if it's really bothering you, then you sit and you speak to your peers about it. How did I handle this? How does this look to you? Did I do something wrong? Did I do something right? Be willing to accept what they have to say and listen to their stories, because everybody's got them. Everybody has stories about how they handled things maybe better, they could have handled them better, or, you know, they think that this was possibly the best way for them to handle the scene. And be active in it. There's no end to knowledge. There's no end to learning in this. I learn something every single day, especially teaching, because of this feeling and this opportunity to talk to people that have had different things happen to them that I haven't, and their willingness to share with us, with me. I mean, what else is out there that's like that? And if you got something like that, how lucky are you to be able to live in that domain and to be a whole human in that world? That's great. That's great. And if you have it, oh, use it, you know, use it. You exploit it to the hilt and give back to it, which I feel like I really get to say with teaching, that I give back as much as I get. And well, I probably get more than I give back. You know, I could really get some cool lectures and things together and hone it down, make it more and more specific and make it more entertaining and have better, side caveats to talk about that make things more fun, make people giggle, make, you know, like it wakes your brain up, make it more of a brain waker than a draw lecture all the way through. You know, who the hell wants to listen to that? I certainly don't. That's the goal of this upcoming series that I'm putting together for the continuing education classes that I'm setting up. Make it fun. Make it visceral. Let this people be listening to this, thinking to themselves as they're listening to me. Who wants to sit there and hear, the bougie is implanted once you have when you're dealing with a difficult airway, one of the easier ways to deal with this is the gum elastic bougie. The gum elastic bougie is a 22-inch long plastic device that goes into this. Who cares? How's it work? Hey, guys, I'm a paramedic. I have never used the bougie, but maybe I've never had a more difficult airway. Maybe I'm good at it. Who knows? I'm better than you. Let's talk about the bougie. You know, and then here's the bougie. By the way, bougie is probably the ultimate genius eureka device out there. Who thought of that million-dollar idea? It's a plastic, long, flexible dowel with a little hockey stick crunk at the end of it and a black little stripe at it. Okay? This thing, you basically just intubate with it, stick it into the trachea, and then you slide the endotracheal tube over the top of it. Okay, yeah, a great idea. You know what's even more great about that? It's a piece of plastic. It probably costs 0.3 cents to produce, and the damn things are probably $3 to restock. So you out there, the inventor of the gum elastic endotracheal bougie, I salute you, sir. You found your million-dollar idea, and you crushed it. Be on the lookout for those ideas out there, everybody. Think about what your million-dollar idea is and follow through on it. Because that dude or that dame is raking in the dough, raking in the diesel, raking in the dough, cracking in prison, living in where they living. They're living in the tropics. It's not working today. I got no beat. They're living it up in Bermuda. Laughing, stirring their Mai Tais with bougies, and just giggling their ass to their bank, their offshore accounts somewhere in the Caymans. Yeah, it's great, dude. Just just pay attention to, you know, take a look at some EMT courses out there and set it up. What else is going on? Off for a couple days now. Had a couple of day, a good shift the other day, and ran some crazy calls. Nothing I want to get into today. I got to think and ruminate. That's going to be my new thing. It's just kind of think about some of the calls that I had. Nothing too crazy. You know, aside from your regular craziness of emergency medicine. Just the stuff that we come across. You know, you were on in and you're dealing with this patient, then you realize that their daughter also is... has some kind of mental retardation or something, and you go, oh, Jesus, we just walked into a whole life, and I'm just dealing with this woman's sprained wrist, but her life is this that we're looking at, and what an interesting 5 minutes to sit or 10 minutes to sit and just kind of absorb somebody's life and go, uh-huh, oh, yeah, it could be this. It could be this, too, because it's their life. But mine's not this. It just really gives you a point of view. So many different point of views that you'd never be, you'd never ever even hear about, let alone be immersed in for, you know, just a little ladle dip into. And to kind of just look and swirl that water around and take a sip and think, God, that's okay. So that's somebody's life. And look at them. They're doing just fine. Everybody's just fine. Everybody's managing. Everybody's surviving. Everybody's getting along. Everybody's doing some people better than others. But for the most part, what do we have? We have our lot, and we deal with it the way that we choose. That's it. We have our lot, and we choose the way in which we're going to handle it. That's just a crazy thought. And that's really all life is. Well, it may be meaningless. It may be this. Here's the point. It's meaningless. So by that rationale, create your own meaning. What you think is important, somebody else might. But what they think is important, maybe you don't. The cool part is when you guys both find something that you can both think is cool and jab with. And that's what I really want to find out. There are people that are, you know, passionate about the same things, or just passionate in general. Passionate that want to speak about things, that enjoy communication. And I like to get a little bit heated too. Well, I mean, I like to have really in-depth conversations with people. Good discourse really makes the day go by faster and more enjoyable. So to me, it starts with, you know, just enjoying communicating with somebody, having a good discourse, laughing, disagreeing, all in good fun, or all in the goal of finding something else out, of enrichment. And then, you know, one of the greatest little things that I've found in my life that I can talk about like that is emergency medicine, because I grew up around it and I get it. And it's been more of a job to me for my entire life. It's been my life because it was my parents' life before me. So I grew up within this, and this being my life. So it's very easy for me to kind of look at this as more than a job and more of a, you know, well, how do you learn in life? You just trial and error, or you learn, you listen to people and everything else. And that's what I do with this job. Whereas some other people that just look at this, well, I leave the job behind. Okay, that's good. I'm glad they can do that. Sometimes you can't necessarily do that. And I've been lucky enough that if I can't leave something behind and I have questions and I have doubts about what I did, I can bring it to my mother. I can bring it to my father. I can bring it to my colleagues, and we can talk about it after work. We can talk about it in forums, and I can talk about it in class. And what a lucky son of a gun I am. What a lucky guy. So I want you to think about that. What are you lucky for? What do you have out there that you can use and you can have discourse with? And what do you want to have more knowledge of? And I would invite you, I would ask you all out there, try and find a way to find the people in you, in your life, that you know or that you want to know, that have the knowledge that you would want to have, and find a way to talk to them. Go out and find a way to do it. I've been additionally lucky because I made up another purpose in life, and that was to have a podcast to talk about emergency medicine, and it gives me an excuse to call people up and say, hi, Dr. So-and-so, I have a podcast and I would like to talk to you about this topic. And it's an excuse for me to go hang out with somebody cool for an hour and a half. And then, good to meet you. What an enjoyable experience. When you meet somebody that you actually have a real good rapport with, now you can call them and you can talk to them. And now you can run ideas off of them. And now they can run ideas off of you. And you create this family of people that are like-minded, that are also passionate about what you're passionate about, that are able and accessible to talk to, and that are all kind of going for a result, not just kind of a predicament. You happen to be in this life. Well, choose the life. And you do that by, who do you choose to have around you? It's real easy. Choose the people that make you happy. Choose the people that wake your mind up. Choose the people that inform you and stay with them. Hang out with them and create your own little, nugget, your little kernel of fun and enjoyment. And things, will stem off of that. Things will grow and blossom off of that. And those offshoots you might follow and find more things about. And all of a sudden, you're looking at this cool, beautiful tree that has grown. And you go, how did it all start? Well, it started from this one thing that I loved, and I met all of these people and learned all of this knowledge from, just because I let it grow, just because I watered it on a weekly basis, like I'm doing by putting out a weekly podcast. I have this dormant I have this dormant orchid that's been sitting behind my tree in my house, and it's been dormant. It's just been one long branch for probably 9 months. I just kept it, and I recently, threw a little water in it, and all of a sudden, it's sprouting again, and I have these beautiful orchids popping up. I take that as an omen. It's a good thing. It's growing because I gave it a little water and a little TLC, and who knows what you can do with a little water and a little TLC out there. Think about it and give it to yourselves and give it to the world, because if you got it, sure enough, use it. Okay? I love y'all. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week. You got a reaction. You got a reaction, didn't you? You took a while.